Well, good evening and welcome. I miss our live studio audience, Phil. That was a blast.
That was a lot of fun.
We need to do more of those. I don't necessarily miss Dion Leffler, but I definitely miss. I mean, Dion's all right, you know. I'll be nice. I'll behave. yeah.
It was a good time, and it was a good event. It was a good location.
It was the best of times. It was the worst of times.
There you go.
Happy to have you with us this evening here at your local liberal resistance headquarters, where we proudly champion those conservative values of limited government, individual liberty, free enterprise, and traditional values, all the things that Dion Leffler hates. We're thrilled to have you with us this evening. If you'd like to call in, our studio lines are open. You can reach us 316-869-1330 by email at john@knssradio.com, on Facebook and True Social at the John Whitmer Show, and on X at John R. Whitmer. Reach out. We'd love to hear from you. I got a great show tonight. Sedgwick County Commissioner Jim Howell will be with us. Jim Don Quixote Howell is tilting the windmills again. And he's got another slew of, you know, efficiencies, things that he's going to try and do to help cut spending at the Sedgwick County Commission. And, you know, we'll see if he can get a second yet again. We'll talk to him again tonight about things that he's trying to do to trim spending out at the county commission. We'll talk to him here in a few minutes. Brittany Jones from Kansas Family Voice will try and explain why I know it's Lawrence. I know it's the People's Republic of Lawrence, but the people up there in Lawrence, jiminy Christmas, Lawrence Public School District has issued a new transgender policy for the district that likely violates state law and executive order, presidential executive order, banning males from female spaces. We'll talk with Brittany Jones about that. State Senator Renee Erickson will be with us to try and explain why the Kansas Board of Education voted to lower the standards for student assessment, because that's always a great idea. Let's just lower expectations. it makes it easier for kids to pass, I guess. You know, if that's your goal, we want more kids to do better. So rather than, I don't know, teach them, let's just lower the standards. Tanner Temple from Americans for Prosperity will tell us how the Wichita Eagle brought in, I don't know if you saw this. So we know Woj, the commission that I served on. Yeah. So yep. We came out with our study. So the Eagle just did this, I mean, brutal op-ed, just eviscerated. It wasn't even an op-ed. It was an actual quote unquote news article. Mm-hmm. And their expert was a sociologist. Yeah. Yeah.
I saw you use the air quotes there.
Yes. Yeah. A purple haired, you know, the gal who wrote the article was some purple haired nose ring, you know, journalist. And I, again, quotes on the journalist. Mm-hmm. And her expert that she brought in was a sociology professor. So that should tell you right there what kind of journalism, again, air quotes on journalism.
Wink and a nod.
Right. It's the Wichita Eagle. But anyway, we'll talk with Tanner about, it's the Eagle. So what do you expect? I mean, there's a reason the Wichita Eagle is birdcage liner. But anyway, we'll talk with Tanner about how the Wichita Eagle chose to respond to Woj. Regardless, I mean, this is a bipartisan thing. You'd think that they could at least get behind something that had Democrat support, but nope, they trashed it. Right. So, yeah. And we'll talk with Charlotte O'Hara, who is one of the ad nauseum list of candidates running for governor on the, I think we're up to 9, soon to be 10 or 11. But Charlotte O'Hara is one of the Republican candidates running for governor. We'll talk with her. And of course, we'll be taking your calls at 316-869-1330. The studio lines are open. So, you know, I've lost my patience with them, folks. I've said it before. I'll say it again tonight. There's no more denying it. Mark Levin had a whole book on this, not his most recent book, but his last book. And he's absolutely right. The left hates America. I'm not lying anymore. I'm not going to pretend. They do. They hate America. The Democrats, their friends in the media, the progressive elites in Washington, Hollywood, they despise this country. Not to say that they, you know, wouldn't like it if it changed, but in its current form, and I don't mean because of Donald Trump, I mean just because in its current form as a republic, they hate it. They may dress it up in nice sounding words, but their actions, their rhetoric, their policies, and their symbolism scream it from the rooftops. Think about it. When was the last time you saw Democrats proudly wave the American flag at one of their rallies? You know, we see them burn it. When was the last time they sung the national anthem with pride or said the pledge? They boo, they kneel in opposition, in protest to our anthem, to our flag. Of course, you know, again, as I said last week's monologue, they'll sing other people's anthems. They'll wave other flags, Palestinian flags or pride flags or Mexican flags or, you know, rainbow flags, but not ours. The media, they'll bend over backwards to defend every radical protest that trashes our cities, burn police cars, tear down statues of our founders. They'll excuse it as mostly peaceful, but when hardworking Americans wave the flag, go to church and say they love the country, the media labels it as, you know, dangerous extremists or and ad nauseum other ad hominem attacks. Democrats in Congress, they lecture us endlessly about America's sins or slavery or Jim Crow or racism or climate change or, you know, you name it. They treat America as if it's nothing but a stain on history. And yet the same Democrats live in gated communities, send their kids to private parochial schools, enjoy the freedoms bought by American soldiers, sacrifices, and cash the taxpayer checks from the very system they claim to despise. And this isn't the America our fathers and grandfathers defended. This isn't the America that stormed the beaches of Normandy, that put a man on the moon, that defeated communism. Ronald Reagan once said, if we forget what we did, we won't know who we are. The left wants us to forget. They want us to rewrite history, to tear down the founding principles, and to convince every young person in this country that America isn't worth saving. Progressivism is built on grievance. It thrives on division. It depends on teaching people to hate their own country, because if you can convince a generation to hate America, then you convince them to replace America with something else. Socialism, globalism, collectivism, you know, pick one. That's why they preach identity politics. That's why they push radical gender ideology. That's why they censor dissent and cancel conservative voices. It's not about fairness. It's not about equality. It's about destroying the foundations of the greatest country ever created so they can rebuild it into their twisted vision of government control. And meanwhile, look at conservatives, look at Republicans, look at everyday Americans on the right. We love the country. We believe in the flag. We believe in the anthem. We, you know, kneel for prayer. We kneel for the flag. We pray. We believe in the Constitution. We teach our kids to respect veterans, to pray, to work hard, to be proud of being American. When conservatives gather, it's a celebration. A rally looks like a 4th of July parade, families and flags and music and patriots. And when it's done, we clean up after ourselves. When the left gathers, it looks like a revolution. Spray paint on the walls and broken windows and garbage on the streets. And instead of the stars and stripes, they're waving Palestinian flags and Hamas flags or chanting for socialism or demanding America apologize for existing. That's the truth. That's the contrast. And the media, they're not just complicit, they're leading the charge. DNCNN, MSLGBTV, the New York Times, they're never miss a chance to smear America. They'll tell you American dream is dead. They'll tell you our institutions are broken. They'll tell you our history is evil. They'll tout about white privilege and but they'll never tell you what millions of Americans know in their hearts, that this country is still the last best hope for man on earth. That's why people are risking their lives every day to get here, not to Venezuela, not to Cuba, not to China, here to America. Winston Churchill once warned, the inherent voice of capitalism is the unequal sharing of blessings The inherent virtue of socialism is the equal sharing of miseries. The left, the media, the Democrats, they want us to share in misery. Because misery is control. If you can convince America to hate their blessings, you can make them slaves to the state. So let's be clear. There's no more denying it. The left hates America. They prove it every day in their speeches, in their classrooms, in their streets, in their policies. But here's the good news. Millions of us still love America. Millions of us believe in the Constitution, in freedom, in hard work, in faith, in family. Millions of us are ready to fight, not with violence, but with votes, with truth, with courage. Because this is still our country. This is still the shining city on a hill. And no amount of flag burning or statue toppling or media propaganda is going to change that fact. So the question is simple. Are we going to let America haters win? Or are we going to let America firsters win? Are we going to stand up proud and unashamed and say what every patriot knows in their heart? God bless America, the greatest nation on earth. And we're not about to let the left tear that down. We'll take a quick break, and then State Senator Renee Erickson will, speaking of great Americans, State Senator Renee Erickson will join us to explain why the Kansas Board of Education just voted to lower the scale for state assessments. You're listening to the John Whitmer Show. We'll be back right after this. Certainly not the public kind. Jiminy Christmas. Welcome back to the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS, Wichita's number one talk. Want to remind you about our friends at Americans for Prosperity. If you're looking for a way to get involved, if you're not, you know, if you don't have a campaign that you're really fired up about, the great folks at Americans for Prosperity are out every day. They're door knocking. They're educating voters. It's a great way to get involved, to help educate voters. Visit AmericansForProsperity.org and sign up today. And of course, while you're at it, make sure you like and follow the John Whitmer Show Facebook page and follow us on X at John R. Whitmer to get all the latest updates on the show. Well, the Kansas State Board of Education voted 7-3 this week to accept new cut scores for determining proficiency levels at the state assessment test. To give you some context here, 10th grade proficiency levels have jumped, basically. They've consistently hovered in the 20s for many years. So basically 20% of students were proficient in reading, which is abysmal, by the way. That's terrible. However, in the last year, they jumped to 42%. All of a sudden, 42%. Now, how did that happen? Well, they changed the test. Math proficiency nearly doubled from 21% to 37%. And yeah, so what they've done is they've changed the scores. They haven't done anything to improve teaching or help these kids to retain their reading and math proficiency. They just dumbed down the scores. The question is, how does a Kansas Board of Education, which is mostly Republican, approve that? Well, only three of them did. The other seven voted, three of them voted against it. Seven voted in favor. So the question is, how does that happen? Well, I don't know. I've talked to the three who voted opposed, and they said, well, because the rest of them are rhinos. So with us now to maybe help explain how this happens and what, if anything, we can do about it is State Senator Renee Erickson. Renee, I mean, I don't mean to be mean here, but is this a situation now where the legislature maybe has to step in here, or do we have to have an independent assessment like the ACTs or something? Because I'm sorry, how does all of a sudden assessment scores jump from 20 to 42%, or are the kids just that much smarter in 1 year?
Well, hey, John, thanks for having me. Always good to be on.
Of course.
Well, it does pass the smell test. They can say that they're not lowering standards or they're not reducing rigor, and that's just not being intellectually honest. So what they have done is, well, and by the way, this is nothing new. we know that this is their MO. Whenever they can't show improvement over a period of time, they change the state assessment. So the legislature, we tried to be preemptive in passing a bill in 2024 that said they cannot substantially revise or update ELA or MAS standards in a manner that would necessitate a new assessment. Well, they are saying we didn't change the standards. We changed the test and the cut scores. And they admit that the purpose of us saying that is because we need to have longitudinal data. We need to be able to compare apples to apples over a long period of time. Well, whenever we start to do that, they move the goalpost. We knew this was coming. We knew that they were going to try to move the goalpost. So we did that legislation, and they're saying, oh, we didn't change the standards. So that's kind of how this is going.
I mean, I remember I had a Democrat member on the show a while back, and we were going back and forth, and he kept going back to this stat and the other stat, and I kept pointing out college and career readiness because it was one of the few that were actually negative. So now they've changed this stat so that now they won't have any negative stats, basically, is what it seems to me like all they've done is tried to eliminate all of their bad marks effectively.
Well, yes, they cannot use money as an excuse for not producing student outcomes anymore. I mean, even the Democrat governor is saying, we fully funded schools. That was their out before. If we had more money, we could improve outcomes. Well, they can't use that excuse legitimately anymore. And so they have to try to find some other way to skirt accountability for student outcomes. And this is what they've chosen to do. And we knew that they would do it. And to your point earlier, John, of course, we're going to have to step in. And it's just a shame that they spent $29.9 million of taxpayer money to rewrite a test because the reason they're giving is, well, the cut scores are misaligned and have been for 10 years. For 10 years, they have been overseeing a test that they created, that they designed, that they developed. And now they're telling us, well, for the past 10 years, it's been misaligned. Are we to believe that the same people, the same commissioner and the same group at KU are now, let's give them $29.9 million to fix the mistake that they created? It's just mind-boggling.
So, all right. So let's be generous and say that this is genuine, that they're not just trying to rig the system so they don't have bad marks anymore. Even if they are just trying to get accurate results, I guess my question is, it doesn't get to the root problem, which is you're still only getting 20% of students that are proficient in reading and 26% or 25% proficient in math. Just because you change the test doesn't change the results.
No, absolutely not. And here's the thing, John. They admit that in the process, they say over and over, we didn't change the standards because that would be a clear violation of the statute. If you don't change the standards, why do you need to rewrite the test? If the problem was an alignment with cut scores, we could get apples to apples longitudinal data because we could say, here's where students fell under the old cut scores, and here's where they fell under the new. But they didn't. They designed a new test because, mind you, teachers wanted a shorter test. So now the test is shorter. They wanted, and I quote, more exciting reading passages for kids. Oh. And this is the test that they developed, so there's no way. They say that they're going to try to get comparison. There's no way. It's a completely different test.
What does it matter if it's more exciting? I guess I don't understand what they think it needs to be a more engaging test. Is that it?
I guess. And another reason they gave is, well, we want to make sure that the passages we're giving kids on the test match the lexile for the grade of reading they're in. Are you telling me they weren't doing that before? If you listen to the rationale and what they've done, it flies in the face of reasoning. And these are the people in charge of educating our students. It ought to shock everybody that this is the kind of logic they use.
Yeah, Well, and again, if for me, it comes back to, it sounds like they're just trying, really, like you said, it doesn't pass the smell test. It sounds to me, and again, I've talked to members of the board who voted against this, and it was pretty obvious from them. They voted against it because it seemed to them, and it seems to the average Kansan, I think, that they're just trying to dumb down this test in order to get better results because they're tired of answering. They're tired of the same question. And so, well, it's a lot easier to explain 47% results than 24% results, really.
Well, and parents need to wake up. They're going to have a child that was not proficient in reading, and now they are. Their parents are going to think, well, my child must be doing better.
Right.
They must have acquired the skills and knowledge they need to be proficient. And it's not. They just simply moved the cut score.
Right.
They moved the bar. And I think part of this, too, John, is we are working on rewriting the school finance formula, and they are hearing it over and over. We want to see outcomes for the money that we're investing. We want to see student outcomes. Well, their answer isn't to actually produce better outcomes. It's to lower the bar.
Yes.
And Kansans should not stand for that.
So what else can they do? Can the legislature, when you guys go back next year, can you put in a system in place? Because my understanding is that the legislature has the ability to force the Kansas Department of Education to use an independent testing program other than something that they put in themselves, like ACT. Can you do that?
Well, John, despite their claims that they're the fourth branch of government, the fact is that their constitutional authority is fairly limited. Their authority to do the specifics they do, like assessments and standards for curriculum and teacher licensure, those are all given through statute. And if the legislature can give via statute, guess what? The legislature can take away via statute.
Right.
And we'll see. Sadly, John, we have a lot of the same problems the state board does. You elect people that say they're Republicans and they're going to look out for the kids. We have a lot of the same problem in the legislature. So will we have the political will, or will weak Republicans put their political expediency and ambition ahead of what's good for kids?
Right.
We'll bring it. Make no doubt, make no mistake, I'll bring it, and there are others who will bring it, because this should not stand. I just hope we get the people who have the will to put kids' needs above their own ambition.
Well, and then the question is, do you have the ability, the votes, to override the governor?
Well, if we have Republicans who do the right thing and look out for kids, We will. We've got the numbers. That's the question.
Yeah. So. Yeah. No, here's another. I'm constantly coming up against these issues that I keep pointing out to people that reinforce the need for a Republican governor and the right Republican governor next year, because it's not just putting an R in that office on the second floor. It's putting the right R, because there are even some of those candidates, and we're going to have one on the show here coming up here later in the show, and I'll ask her, because you know we can elect a Republican, but if she's going to veto this kind of stuff, then there's might as well just elect another Democrat.
Couldn't agree more, John. You're exactly right, and we know of those that have already thrown their hat in the ring. From experience, and you've been in the legislature, we kind of know who's who and who shakes out on which side of that.
Yep.
So you're absolutely right. It's not enough to elect an R. It's got to be the right R.
Yep, exactly. Renee, thank you again, as always. You're a champion. We appreciate you coming on the show and sharing your wisdom with us. If folks want to connect with you, what's the best way for them to do that?
Social media, or they can email me at renee.erickson@senate.ks.gov.
Senator,
always
thank you.
It's a pleasure to be on, John.
My pleasure.
Thank you so much.
My favorite senator, as I always like to say. So thank you, as always, and keep fighting a good fight, my friend.
Will do. Thanks, Sean.
Coming up, Sedgwick County Commissioner Jim Howell will be with us to discuss his efforts to cut spending at the Sedgwick County Commission. You're listening to the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS, Wichita's number one talk. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS, Wichita's number one talk. Want to remind you to stay informed with up-to-the-minute news by telling Alexa or Google Home to play KNSS. And make sure you like and follow the John Whitmer Show on Facebook and True Social. And listen to KNSS on the Odyssey, iHeartRadio, or TuneIn apps. Those are the best ways to get all the latest updates on the show. Well, you know, every time the county is at this point when they're working on the budget, it seems like my good friend Jim Howell is mounting his horse and tilting at windmills. He gets out his Don Quixote outfit and goes at it again. And sadly, we get the same result. And I don't know what we can do about it. We've got to help lift him up. I saw an article in the Wichita Eagle again today where it talked about, you know, once again, Wichita homeowners are likely to see much tax relief both at the city and the county level because of, you know, revenue neutral rates. And it's just despite the fact that they've lowered the mill levy, both at the city and the county level. So, you know, we got to get him some help with us now to tell us a little bit about some of the efforts that he's, some of the things that he's trying to do to help us is County Commissioner Jim Howell. And, Jim, I don't know, brother, what's it going to take, my friend?
Well, John, thanks for having me on the show tonight. It's a great honor. Actually, I'm actually encouraged. We had a staff meeting last Tuesday where I really just kind of laid my cards on the table. And I think the conversation was sober. I think people were a little bit surprised by some of the ideas I came up with. But since then, I would tell you, I think things have moved. And actually, I can't say for sure that things are going to happen until we get to Wednesday when we adopt this budget. But I can tell you that I believe that people have been thinking pretty hard about this. And I would not be surprised if at least some of the ideas I came up with last Tuesday will actually be adopted this year. So I'm actually quite surprised, actually kind of excited about that.
Well, that's great. What were some of the ideas that you've put forward that you think might gain traction that maybe listeners could call their county commissioners and, you know, I mean, they need to call Ryan and Pete and, you know, and Stephanie and say, hey, get behind this.
Let me give you a few of these ideas. So my first goal was to lower the, now I have to use the word capture. Now, the manager's budget would have captured 5.5% of our 8.6% growth. And I don't feel comfortable with that number, primarily because inflation was about 3.5%. So that to me is just, it's unattainable. So I wanted to get down to 4 to 4.5%. Now, I can argue 4 to 4.5% primarily because when you add in the consumer price index, that's inflation plus new construction, you get to about 4 to 4.5%. So to me, that was a goal to get to that number. So here's my cuts. I wanted to cut just under $1 million to the auto license fund. Now, what that is there's a state the state subsidizes the auto, the tag offices. And there's a lot of fees that are charged when you go to the tag office. Unfortunately, those fees are capped, and it's now become a property tax problem, where we would have to provide just under $1 million to the tag offices this year to run them as we have. And I'm not going to support that. So again, Brandy Bailey does a good job, our county treasurer, but this is a state problem, or it's a fee problem, or it's a tag office problem, but certainly not a property tax problem. So I understand the lines might get a little bit longer, and I know people aren't going to like that, but that's what you do, is what you have to do when you start cutting property taxes. You got to do things like this. So
right.
My first cut is $1 million out of that fund. Then I'm going to suggest we do not create, an accreditation manager for 911. I don't want to support that. This also includes a reduction. There was a request for 20 new 911 dispatchers. I'm only going to support 13 of those. Now that's a cut that's kind of uncomfortable, but that's about a little more than $500,000. To not fund the full 20 on that. And then finally, it was going to be a cut to expiration place. And expiration place would have to give up about $500,000. So altogether, those four cuts together gets us down to about 4.5%. Actually, that gets us down to basically 27.417 mils, which is altogether about a one. If you add all this up together, gets it to about from a 0.8 to 2 mil heavy cut that was recommended by our manager, brings it down to about a $1.3 mil levy rate cut, which is a whole lot better, I think. A few of the other cuts I was suggesting was cut the Wichita Arts Council 100%. This last year we gave them about $14,000. Now it's not a lot of money, but believe it or not, we're giving them more money than Wichita does. And I find that to be, we should not from the county be funding this at all. So I was suggesting we cut the Arts Council 100% this year, taken from $14,000. The suggested in the recommended budget was $13,300. I'm going to just take that down to zero. I want to give the Sedgwick County Fair a haircut, bring them from about $25,000 down to $22,000. I want to eliminate an IT position. This one I'm a little bit uncomfortable with, actually. I'm still thinking about this one. You know, we have a lot of risk with cybersecurity issues.
Right.
We have a request for an IT person, a manager position. It's $123,000. I think they justified it pretty well. I don't know that we have to have it because they don't have it right now. So it's a growth. I don't know. You know, the manager's budget has it in there. I would suggest maybe we rethink that. I don't know that we have to have that position. There are some positions that are on the books right now that are not funded or filled positions currently. I just want to wipe them from the tables. That's about three positions. And then I want to basically reallocate. This is actually not going to help the budget necessarily, but reallocate some money from the Northwest Expressway. I know that you expressed some support for that. I know it's a highway out by Goddard, but
right.
Honestly, we don't have any. We have no way to know this is ever going to happen. I want to transfer $200,000 of that to a project in my district, which I think has a better chance of happening. That's $200,000 of sales tax funds. We go from this to that. And so, anyway, all together, and there's a few other minor things I'm talking about, stormwater and for Oakland Transit. But basically, that's the gist of it. All together, if you do all those things I just suggested, it cuts about another half a mil out of the budget. And that half a mil takes it from what would have been about a 2.714 cut to the recommended budget. It'll bring it down to another 4.53% cut. So altogether, we're capturing about 4% versus the current 5.5%.
Any cuts to the zoo?
Well, yeah, there's a cut to the capital improvement project. That's actually in the manager's recommended budget.
Good.
And that cut's already there.
Good.
We still have to fund our staff, our Sedgwick County employees. We have about 112 employees. We have to fund those. Now, one of the things I'm trying to find a way to solve this still. I don't really have an answer for this yet, but they're requesting two new FTEs for the elephant barn. I know that's been a thing on your radio show.
Yeah.
No. I would like to see find a way to have that funded through the society, actually, is my preference.
Yeah. No. No.
We agree on that.
Shouldn't have built the barn in the first place, and now they got to staff the barn. So, yeah, this is a boondoggle. Yeah. It was a boondoggle when you built it in the first place. But, you know,
Jim. I'll give you one more thing. Yeah, maybe one more thing that's really a big deal. Stephanie Wise wanted to talk about doing a buyout for Exploration Place, and I've been looking at this really hard. I think we're going to have a deal on this. What that means is we're going to give them about $1 million cut to what they consider to be our promise to them, which would end in 2027. We're going to cut them around $1 million altogether and use ending balance out of this current year, 2025, to get rid of that contract entirely. Just buy it out. And we'll save about $1 million. And if we can do that, we can capture mill levy savings for both the 2026 budget and the 2027 budget. That'll save us in both of those years, a mill levy cut for both of those years. And in doing that, we would probably see basically no funding for Exploration Place in the next two fiscal cycles. And by the way, with that, I would say it's my intent to never return them the property tax support in the future.
I think that's great. And I know that you and Ryan and, well, actually all four of you have really talked for a while about trying to transition a number of those entities more onto fee service or fee funded, user fee basically funded. And I think they should be. I think that's probably the better way to go on all of those. Get them off the property tax rolls. And the faster we can do that, I think is better. So I'm glad to see that kind of transitioning in that way. By the way, we're talking with Sedgwick County Commissioner Jim Howell, and I know I'm kind of bumping up against my break here real quick, but how do you think, has there been talk any further about any of the, you know, trying to lower or shifting anything to a sales tax and lowering the property tax at all?
I'm so glad you asked. I actually have a resolution that, and I want to make sure we keep the conversation packaged together.
Right. Oh, it has to be.
Lower property taxes and shift about basically a good chunk of our discretionary spending, things that people support, things like Sedgwick County Zoo. So those employees would be paid for through a sales tax initiative, and we would lower the property taxes an equivalent dollar-for-dollar amount.
Right.
And this actually comes with some sunsets built in. So if we don't keep our word, people say, well, I don't really trust you guys. I don't, you're your politicians. You don't, you lie. You know, I get that. So let's put some sunsets on this thing. My first sunset would be literally in 2030, and the next one would be in 2038, and then every 8 years thereafter. But again, I will tell you this, we would be able to lower our mill levy another 4.5 mills if we did a 0.25% sales tax. In other words, you get 25 cents on $100 worth of retail spending. That would be enough to lower our property taxes by 4.5 mills. And that would be forever,
right,
as long as we continue to keep that going. To me, 4.5 mills, you know what? I say it this way. I don't want someone to be threatened with their home. Something as so important as their where they live, because we want to feed penguins and elephants and things
exactly.
like that.
My opinion exactly.
is, we want to get them onto sales tax. That's more appropriate, and lower property taxes. People say, well, wait a minute, it's hard on poor people. Let me tell you what's hard on poor people is getting them kicked out of their home.
Right.
Everything they use, their mortgage, their rent, their insurance, their utility bills, everything they need, even including food now, is no sales tax on it. And so, by the way, even if you're lower income, there's no sales tax even from the county on WIC or SNAP or TANF benefits. And so no sales tax to live in your home and to eat your food. We want to move sales tax. You know, if you buy pizza or tennis shoes or whatever, you're going to be funding these things. And we can move about $35 million worth of spending out of this budget and on to sales tax and lower our mill levy by 4.5 mils. We would simply put this in front of the people, and they would vote for that.
Well, and that's the key. That's the one thing that people have to remember about this. It wouldn't come from you. It would go to the people and let them vote, and I think that's the way to do it. Jim, I appreciate you, brother. If folks want to reach out to you, if they want more information, if they want to connect, what's the best way for them to do that?
Absolutely. Jim.Howell@Sedgwick.gov or my cell phone, 316-253-6797.
Jim, keep tilting the windmills, brother. We appreciate you, Don Quixote.
Thank you, my friend. I really appreciate your support.
Thanks, brother. We'll take a quick break, and then we'll take your calls, 869-1330. You're listening to the John Whitmer Show. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS, Wichita's number one talk. Don't forget about our friends at Americans for Prosperity. If you're looking for a way to get involved, AFP, great folks. My wife and I pounded out some doors for about 150 doors for them on Saturday. Great day. A little warm, but we still did our part door knocking. If you're looking for a way to get involved to, door knock, help educate voters, you can find out more information. Visit AmericansForProsperity.org. It's a great way to sign up and get involved. And, of course, while you're at it, make sure you like and follow the John Whitmer Show Facebook page. And it's a great way to get involved. They're out there door knocking right now. So it's a great way to get involved and help educate voters. Coming up after the top of the hour break, Brittany Jones will explain why the Lawrence Public School District is violating the law. We'll be back right after this. You know, Phil, I get the nasty emails every time we play this intro music. Welcome back to the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS, Wichita's number one talk. Want to remind you about our friends at Americans for Prosperity, Kansas. If you're looking for a way to get involved and this election cycle, they're out right now. They're door knocking. They're talking to folks. Particularly, they're talking about the constitutional amendment that's going to be on your ballot next August. If you're looking for a way to get involved, if you're looking for a little extra grandkids money, if you got a someone who's looking to make a little extra money during the, well, what's left of the summer, reach out to them, AmericansForProsperity.org, and get activated, get involved, and make your voice heard by reaching out to them. And of course, while you're online, you can make sure you like and follow the John Whitmer Show Facebook page, and follow me on X at John R. Whitmer to get all the latest updates on the show. Well, in a challenge to Kansas state law, Lawrence Public Schools, that's USD 497. It's, you know, where the University of Kansas, my alma mater, the UC Berkeley of the Midwest, USD 497 issued a policy for the new school year this last week on the interaction with transgender, non-binary, and gender non-conforming students. I'm sorry. I'm going to have to try and do this with a straight face. In 2023, the state legislature passed House Bill 2238, the Fairness in Women's Sports Act. Among its provisions, it specifies that athletic teams or sports designated for females, women, or girls shall not be open to students of the male sex. But apparently, in Lawrence Public Schools, they're just going to ignore that law. With us now to explain exactly what the Lawrence Public School System, it's Lawrence, right? Brittany Jones with American, with Kansas Family Voice. How exactly, I mean, are they just openly defying this, or have they come up with some cockamamie excuse?
I mean, we're talking about Lawrence, John.
Right.
So that's, again, who knows?
Again,
like, your guess is as good as mine.
Anything that comes out of Lawrence, and I say this knowing full well I came out of Lawrence for college. But
yeah, I mean, and let's recognize there are some fantastic human beings that live in Lawrence.
Yes, yes.
But when we're talking about who leads the governmental bodies, like their city council, like their school boards, they're absolute leftists who don't care about following the law and don't care about protecting the opportunities of women and girls in their schools. And this policy that has come out is just one more example of that.
So they know full well that they're in open defiance of state law. They just don't care.
I mean, that's my assumption, because between what we've done at the state legislature and what President Trump has done through executive orders and what the Department of Ed has done, it is very clear what the law is on this issue. And we shouldn't be having these disputes about whether boys can be in girls' locker rooms or can play on their sports teams. And you know what? We really shouldn't be having disputes about whether schools can hide the gender identity of the child or the name of the child from their parent. It's just common sense.
You would think. I'm glad you brought up the president here, because they're now openly in defiance of an executive order too, as well. And again, they don't care.
It doesn't seem like it. I mean, of course, more information needs to come out. Like, this is the beginning of the investigation, but, you know, we've seen an investigation on four other school districts, and
right
now it sounds like Lawrence might get wrapped in as well. So we'll see how it all plays out. But yeah, it seems as if they don't care about President Trump's executive orders or the policies of the Department of Education or state law.
I've been kind of tweeting and texting back and forth with the founder of the Libs for TikTok Twitter page. She's a friend of mine.
Yes,
and so we kind of conspire together, and she's actually a really, really good advocate to have. She's a good friend to have, because when I need to get stuff out, I give it to her and she shares it, and she's got like a bazillion followers. And so I've given her some of these things, and of course then she shares them and they get, you know, they go viral. But when I sent her this stuff, she laughed, and then she said, "Oh, thank you. I will be happy to share this." And of course she did, and it went viral. But then, you know, she also then immediately got back to me with the whole four stories that you talked about. And that was these four, the Department of Education from Attorney General Kobach, because he's now had to call on the U.S. Department of Education to investigate four school districts for violating Title IX.
Right. And it's just, I mean, it's so sad, right? Because I mean, you and I are laughing about this, right? Because it's so ridiculous what they're doing. But these are real children.
Yeah,
these are real
it's not
parents.
Funny.
These are real family.
It's not
it's
funny.
It's not actually funny.
No.
Right? And it's a violation of the rule of law in so many ways. It's a violation of common sense, human decency, all sorts of things. But yes, we've got four school districts in Kansas, Topeka, one in Topeka, one in I should list them out, but Olathe, Shawnee Mission,
right,
as well as KCK. And I've seen, at least in KCK, I've seen that policy. So unless they've somehow retracted it since I saw it last year, which maybe they did, they'd be smart if they did that, but the investigation will show that. Like, these schools, whether or not they're enforcing them or their secret policies or whatever, these are policies these schools have had at different points in the last couple of years that are hiding information from parents, that are secretly allowing boys in to girls' private spaces.
Right.
Like, we're talking about locker rooms, okay? I don't know if you've been in a locker room recently, but they're not very decent.
No, no. Not a lot of privacy.
No, no, none whatsoever.
No.
And talk to our good friend Riley Gaines about that.
Yes.
But, you know, it's just kind of wild to me that people think that this is okay. And most people don't if you actually talk to them. And so, like, that's what we're dealing with in Kansas. And I think parents need to be vigilant as their kids go back to school. They need to see what these policies are. They need to ask if they're keeping a secret file on their child, which is insane that you should have to ask that question.
Yeah.
But there are a lot of schools, and they think it's a good thing, and it's not.
It's insane that a school would keep a, quote, secret file on their kid. But
right.
Yes. There's one thing I want to – I can't play it. Because it's explicit. But I want to ask you about a story. And again, this involves the Lawrence Public Schools. But there was an incident that occurred at a Lawrence Public School board meeting. And if folks go to my Twitter feed, it's at John R. Whitmer on X. You can watch the video. It's about a 1 minute little video segment where a parent got up at a school board meeting at the Lawrence Public School. Have you seen this video?
Yes.
Okay. So the parent reads this excerpt from a book with extremely sexual pornographic book that is available in the library, and he reads the book to the board, and the board shuts down her mic.
Yeah.
And then they explain that it's too graphic for them.
Inappropriate.
Yes.
Correct.
Now, here's my question for you, Brittany. If it is too graphic for the adults in the room at the board meeting, why is it not too graphic for the school district?
Right. Right. And the minute we try to put any sort of, you know, limitations or like just basic, hey, parents should be aware that these are books that their kids could be reading in a school system. Anytime we try to do anything, we're immediately told that we're banning books,
right?
Not true. And we're being told that we're like some sort of horrific people who just want to keep kids stupid. And that's just not true. Like,
right.
That's not what's actually happening. And, you know, that's why we've tried to pass things like the Give a Name Act, which ensures that parents know what their kids being called in school. And we've tried to pass laws to ensure that, you know, libraries are actually making sure things are age appropriate for these kids. If the adults can't read it in public, then why are the kids reading it?
Oh, and if you, all you have to do is listen to this 1 minute video, and it's grotesquely graphic.
Yeah.
And if the adults were offended, it shows the ludicrous nature of this.
Yeah.
It shows you how stupid and how out of touch these people are. And yet it's very typical of the left where, oh, you can't say anything. Sure. And yet we can't stop it because, oh, well, somebody might get offended somewhere. So
look, if those parents, if parents want their kids to read that,
let them.
I mean, I'm not. That's their right as their parent.
Yes.
Now, there's lines, right? Of course.
In your home.
But like, yeah, but like that shouldn't be something that a curious 6 or 7 year old or older, even older sometimes, should be stumbling on in the library.
Exactly.
You know, like a parent shouldn't have to watch their child like a hawk in the library to make sure they don't get introduced to smut at the age of 6 and 7.
No, but I'm sorry. If a parent wants to read a book to their kid about fellatio and oral sex in their home, look, that means you're a unique kind of parent, but yes,
correct.
But that's your own parenting style, but do that in your own home, not in my public school library.
And you know what? Libraries and schools have limited resources. So why are we spending our money on obtaining books like that when we should be spending it on classics and books that are actually going to further a kid's education?
Right. You know, let's stick to green eggs and ham and things that actually, you know, right now, 20% of kids can't even read, let alone let's educate them about fellatio. I mean, it's how ludicrous this whole argument is. And yet this is the hill they're choosing to die on.
Absolutely.
I said die on. Now I got back thinking about Dion Leffler again. See, I've ruined my whole show. Brittany, thank you again. If folks, this is why people like Kansas Family Voice, the work that you do is so important, because someone has to fight this crap or it's just going to pervade through our school system. If folks need more information, if they want to donate, if they want to get involved, I know you guys are really growing. I just had a great meeting this week with your folks here in Wichita about some of the work you're doing down here. It's KansasFamilyVoice.com, and they can get more information there, correct?
Yep, or you can follow us on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. We would love to help anyone get involved in the amazing work that we're able to do as a team to advance family values in Kansas.
Brittany, best of luck to you. Keep fighting a good fight, my friend.
Thank you, John. I appreciate you.
We'll take a quick break, and then Tanner Temple from Americans for Prosperity will tell us how the Wichita Eagle brought in a liberal sociology major as their expert to debunk the recently released Woj study. You're listening to the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS, Wichita's number one talk. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS. KNSS is always here for you. Let's keep it that way. Tell your legislators to keep AM radio in vehicles by texting 52886 and tell Congress to keep AM radio in cars. And of course, make sure you like and follow the John Whitmer Show on social media, Facebook and True Social, and like and follow the John Whitmer Show on X at John R. Whitmer to get all the latest updates on the show. So you've heard me talk about the Woj report. That's Wichita's version of Doge. We spent 6 months. It's a nonpartisan group of us. We weren't paid, a bunch of volunteers. We studied the city's budget and came up with an analysis of ways that the city could save. And we've made our presentation to the city council last week. And we, that was a pretty reasonable analysis. And I think we got a warm reception to the from the city. Well, the Wichita Eagle didn't think so. They ripped it. And it was a pretty brutal it's not an op-ed, but it sure read like an op-ed that the Wichita Eagle criticized our analysis. And that's a nice way of putting it. But then again, when your reporter is a purple haired millennial with a nose ring, this is what you get. So with us now to kind of give us a little bit of his take on this journalistic expose. And I use, air quotes around journalistic, is Tanner Temple from AFP. And Tanner, I should preface this by saying you guys were not involved in this analysis at all. I mean, we weren't paid for our work. We didn't get any support in this, but I thought it was interesting when I saw this article from the Wichita Eagle, they hit us pretty hard.
Yeah, absolutely. And thanks for having me again on the show, John. But yeah, we read through that, and it was funny that the person they brought to debunk all this citizen-led, tax cuts and efficiencies was some socialist from Massachusetts that works at Wichita State.
Yeah.
So it's an interesting thing they brought this guy in.
Yeah, I did find it amusing that they found a sociology professor who teaches and trains students on how to perform and interpret survey results. And I know we're talking about Chase Billingham. I mean, that he comments a lot. He's a leftist. He's a known leftist here in Wichita. He comments very openly Democrat, very liberal. He's constantly on social media, you know, excoriating all the Republicans. And so I thought that was an interesting person that they chose to cite as their expert, basically. And this was a, you know, this was a 6-month comprehensive report. But the key that she kind of ignored in all this is it was bipartisan. We had a Democrat state lawmaker. We had a Democrat mayoral candidate who were the two of the leading advocates on this. For them to then turn around and rip the report when, you know, Michael Austin, who is a statistician and an economist and is nonpartisan, and then two other people who are Democrats were the leading forces behind this thing, and they ripped it as this was some kind of Republican hit piece put on by, you know, the Cato Institute or something.
Exactly. And again, this was a citizen-led group up from Wichita. You know, these people came together on their own time, including you, and it really had a lot of input on this. So it always cracks me up when they're like, well, this is a Republican AFP hit job and all this stuff. This was a self-started, citizen-owned report that they brought to the Wichita City Council. So, and correct me if I'm wrong, I believe they adopted some of these principles even this, you know, as early as this week.
Yes. We made a number of recommendations, one of which they adopted the very week that we submitted the report. And, you know, some of the things that they took, like, for example, one of the 88% of the respondents claimed in our survey said that they own their homes. Well, the Eagle took issue with that because 58% of the people in the census, 58% report that they own a home. So they felt that that was an error in our survey. Well, how could 88% of the people who took our survey own homes when only 58% actually own them? Well, that just means that that's who took the survey. We never said the survey was scientific. I mean, it's, you see, that's, I guess this girl, I mean, she's young. The reporter who did this is young. And we never made a claim that this was a scientific survey. We just put the survey out there and let people take it. But I guess she just doesn't understand how survey results go. You know, I don't know. I just don't understand.
Yeah, exactly. And again, we brought in, you know, like, you know, I mean, this group brought in like Michael Austin, the economist, guy that studies these things and put this together, this entire report, and along with all these others. And I mean, he has expert knowledge in these backgrounds. Yes. And it just kind of cracks me up. And this is what we've seen from the Wichita Eagle here, even on judicial elections and everything else. These are the type of reporting they're looking on. They, instead of finding another economist or somebody in that realm of business world, they bring in some, again, you know, I went to this guy's Facebook page. It's all public knowledge. He grew up on the East Coast. They brought him in. He's a sociology major. So, it's just a funny direction that they go in to try to discredit what this group of citizens from the Wichita area created.
Well, and one of the things that I think really comes down to on this is they didn't like the results, because for years people have said, and you know how this works, people claim, well, there's nowhere to cut. There's nothing we can do. There's nothing we. Well, no, we found places you can cut. And they also didn't like the results. For example, the majority of the people who took the survey, regardless of the city council district they lived in, they all supported, for example, cutting funding to the arts when you're in a budget shortfall. Eagle doesn't like that result. And so clearly the results must be folks. They must be fake. They don't like the fact that people want you to cut spending. So then they immediately attack the report, as opposed to just saying, well, maybe there's some truth to this. Maybe people actually don't want their taxes to go up. So instead of attacking the, you know, accepting the results, they just attack the survey.
And again, and like, as we've seen at a countrywide level, people want to have cheaper taxes and cheaper cost of living. I mean, that's what happened on a national level with Doge. And then even myself, when I was under the dome with our lobbying and everything else, our activism, we have the Kansas Coge committee that was created in the Senate, and now at an even more local level at Woj. So there is a hunger for more savings of people's tax dollars in their pockets. And that's what this citizen-led group, you know, tried to create and was successful in creating.
You know, another thing that they pointed out in the article is that the budget shortfall is no longer projected. Well, that's this year. It is in the out years. So they made it like, oh, well, it's no longer necessary. Well, I got news for you. The way they're spending, this is going to be necessary. And if they don't get their spending under control, we are going to be, there's not a member of the city council that will tell you that they don't need to cut spending. It's just other than Brandon Johnson, who wants to raise taxes. That's his solution. The rest of them are all willing to cut spending. It's just they don't know where.
And throwing more money into problems is never the answer to solving them. You got to get creative and find ways to cut overspending and tighten the belt in some ways. And that's not always the case. But in many of the cases, and especially when it comes to government, we have to be able to cut back spending and be more conscious of what we do with taxpayer dollars. And that's what, you know, we were so excited to see with this Woj Commission and the things we're doing on the federal level with DOGE and all of these programs. So I think there's definitely a national movement to figure out how do we make America more affordable for everyday Americans.
Tanner, I know I'm up against my bottom of the hour break, but I wanted to ask you real quick. My wife and I have been out. We were out yesterday, door knocking. I know folks are starting to get interested. I think people are really starting to hear the buzz about the judicial selection coming up. Obviously, we've got the local elections that'll be coming up in November. But are you starting to get people now engaging a little bit more on issues?
Yes, sir. No, we are. And as we talk to people and we really explain the problem, and it's a big education push right now, John. And as we talk to people at all these events we go to and go door to door and speaking to people, there is an excitement to do these direct elections to these justices. And again, it's a majority controlled lawyer controlled group. So I think we're definitely getting momentum. You see stuff coming from the Wichita Eagle, Twitter, all these people they're starting to get a lot of opinions on it now. And it's either good or bad. But I feel like the education part of it is really coming to fruition. So we feel good, and the momentum is definitely there.
Well, and the governor just appointed another one just last week, didn't she? I mean, if she literally, nobody knows who this gal is, and literally the governor just appointed yet another one without any transparency, any accountability, and no democratic process.
Again, me and you, I didn't vote for her.
Not
even the governor didn't even get an initial vote for her. She only gets the vote after this commission kicks out these picks to her. So these lawyers are making these picks initially before even she has the choice. So we're really trusting. And when it comes down to it, it is five lawyers that have control over this board. And then they send it off to the governor. We have a no initial say. And the only thing we have is this retention vote, which is redundant anyway, since it's a 99% retention. And I joked around, the only other places that have a 99% retention is, well, China, North Korea. Yeah. I'm joking, but also not joking. I mean, you got to look at these. Exactly. You got to look at these things from these high level views where we explain it to people. But again, the education piece is there. We're door knocking. I appreciate you and your wife door knocking, and I really think we're getting momentum on this.
Well, we enjoy doing it. It's a lot of fun. And we're losing weight. Well, she doesn't need to, but I do. So, Tanner, if folks if they want more information about the judicial selection process, or if they're interested in volunteering or door knocking, what's the best way for them to do that?
Yep. As always, if you go back to takebackthebench.com, again, that's takebackthebench.com, or our AFP Kansas website, and we're all over social media. If you go to our X, Instagram, Facebook, we're pretty active on that. Any of those links will take you right there.
Takebackthebench.com. Brother, I appreciate you as always. Carry on a fight, my friend.
Yes, sir. Appreciate it, John.
We'll take a quick break to pay a few bills, and then Charlotte O'Hara will tell us about her campaign for Governor Kansas. You're listening to the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS, Wichita's number one talk. We'll be back right after this. Since we just heard that Larry Kudlow promo, I'll tease that he's going to be on our show next Sunday. We'll have Larry Kudlow with us next Sunday night, so make sure you tune in. Welcome back to the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS, Wichita's number one talk. Want to remind you to stay informed with up-to-the-minute news by telling Alexa or Google Home to play KNSS, or by listening to KNSS on the Odyssey, iHeartRadio, or TuneIn apps. And, of course, make sure you like and follow the John Whitmer Show Facebook and True Social pages, and follow me on X at John R. Whitmer to get all the latest updates on the show. Well, every election cycle, we try to bring you as many candidates running for office as we can. We endeavor to bring you as many candidates as we can. We invite everybody. Some take us up on it. Some don't. But between now and Election Day, we will try and bring you as many candidates as we can. If there's someone in particular that you'd like to hear from, please let me know. We'll reach out to them. All that being said, joining us now is Charlotte O'Hara. She is a former general contractor and a developer, a small business owner. She served in the Kansas House of Representatives in the 27th District for 2 years and on the Johnson County Commission for 4 years. Charlotte, thank you for joining us. It's a pleasure to have you on the show.
Well, thank you, John. I appreciate the invitation.
So,
and hello, Wichita.
Yes. Well, it's nice to talk again. I know you and I and my buddy Larry Dom had a chance to sit down and talk a while back. So it's nice to chat again.
And I saw you at the Kansas State Rifle Association.
That's
meeting
right.
Too.
Well, and I understand that you're going to be joining us here in Cowley County next month for the chili feed. So we'll see you there as well. I'm sure.
Yeah.
I'm sure we'll see you. That's the beauty of these campaigns is everybody gets around quite a bit. So
we get to know each other very well.
Let me start with I try to ask everybody why they're running. So I know you've. You've been through the ringer before, so it's not like you haven't.
I'm not a stranger.
You're not a stranger to it, but why decide to throw your hat into this ring?
Well, the opportunity offered itself after I finished my term as a county commissioner in Johnson County, and my expertise, I think, is what is needed to lead Kansas into a more fiscally conservative direction. I mean, our expenditures are overall fund is $26.4 billion.
Oh, I'm aware. Trust me.
The general fund is $10.64 billion. We're getting squeezed very hard on property taxes.
What differentiates you from the other Republicans in the race, and what's your what makes you different from the other Republicans, and what's your path to victory that the others don't have? What makes you different?
Well, I have a really strong base in Johnson County because I've been involved in Johnson County politics for years and years and years. And I go out places, people see me and they go, "Oh, Charlotte, so glad you're running for governor. You know, we always vote for you." And so I have a really good base here in Johnson County. And the other thing is that I was raised on a farm. So going out and talking to the folks outside of Johnson County, going to Garden City and Scott City and Ulysses and Goodland, I actually have a nephew who lives out in Goodland. It's like old home week. I love it. I love going out and campaigning. And I'm going to be in Lincoln, Kansas, the 30th of August, tiny little town. And I'm just really looking forward to going and hanging out with the folks and listening to them. But what is on everyone's mind, I don't care whether it's Johnson County, Wyandotte County, Miami County, Riley County, it doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. Ford County, doesn't matter. It's property taxes.
So I'm glad you brought that up. Is there anything, I know the answer to this question. Is there anything the state can do about property taxes? Because the answer, unless you want to touch school funding, there's really nothing the state can do about property taxes anymore.
We need to kind of have a little historical perspective. And in 1986, we passed a constitutional amendment on equalization and reclassification. And at that same year, that was on the primary, that was in August. And then in November, we passed the economic development constitutional amendment, which opened the door to all of these huge tax giveaways. It's all, you know, mostly Johnson County, Sedgwick County. We had one star bond district in Wyandotte County, but Johnson County is really taking a lion's share of those tax incentives, the most prosperous county in the state. And the tax incentives were originally supposed to be for depressed areas.
Correct.
And here we have in Johnson County in 2024, we diverted $108 million from public coffers just in industrial revenue bonds and tax increment finance districts, not taking into consideration any sales tax exemptions, et cetera, et cetera. In fact, the state has no accounting as to how much tax incentives are costing the local level or the state level.
So you would do away with the incentive programs? Is that how? Because you really can't do anything else for property taxes,
well,
other than
right. For sure, we have to look at those programs. I mean, the APEX program that was passed in 22, I mean, sent $829 million down to Johnson County and DeSoto for the Panasonic project.
Oh, trust me, that's a boondoggle. I would not have voted for that had I been in the legislature, and I would imagine I don't know if you would have either.
Absolutely not,
Charlotte.
No way. I mean,
I'm up against a quick break. Do you mind holding through the break?
Oh, no, that's fine.
Okay, we'll take a quick break, and then we'll return and talk with Charlotte O'Hara, who's a candidate for governor. You're listening to the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS, Wichita's number one talk. Welcome back to the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS, Wichita's number one talk. Want to remind you about our friends at Americans for Prosperity. Don't forget their AFP Days of Action are the third Saturdays of the month. Great way to get engaged, make a difference. Visit AmericansForProsperity.org and sign up today. With us still is Charlotte O'Hara. She's a Republican candidate for governor. Charlotte, let's kind of, if we can, we'll crank through some of the major hot button issues that, you know, I know are pressing for a lot of folks as they look at who they may support in the upcoming gubernatorial primary. When I left the legislature in 2018, you know, we had a budget problem. The state budget has grown by 57% over that period of time, $10 billion. And yet our population over that same time has grown by only 58,000 people.
Right.
Do you think Kansas has a spending problem or a revenue problem?
We have a spending problem. No doubt about it. I mean, when you look at your property taxes and that the average across the state of Kansas on your valuation of your house, you're paying 1.26% of your value of your house every year. Oklahoma is 0.75 and Missouri is 0.82. I mean, we're 50% higher.
Yeah.
With that just you can't continue that. That's just it is unworkable. And all the increase in the budget, a lot of that was all the COVID money that came into Kansas. And then we were getting addicted to federal funds. Well, those are gone.
Yep.
Those are gone.
Time to cut spending.
And so now after the binge, we have to wake up and smell the coffee and figure out how we're going to get our fiscal house in order. It is definitely out of order.
Are you a proponent for Medicaid expansion, or are you opposed to that?
No, I opposed.
Let's see. How about school choice? What are your thoughts on school choice? It's a plank in our both the federal and our state party platform.
Yes,
I know
yes.
It's an issue that we want to see. I guarantee you, I know we just had Renee Erickson on the show last hour. It's something that she's been a strong supporter of.
Yes.
What are your thoughts on school choice?
I know a lot of my friends are very supportive of school choice. I have a lot of questions because once you accept state or federal funding, you have strings attached. And it really concerns me that the autonomy of our private schools are going to be undermined. That's my problem. You know, I homeschooled. I sent my my youngest daughter to a Christian school, Heritage Christian Academy. You know, I am And you know, the first thing that I asked when I was looking for a private school, are you accredited? And I was looking for the answer, no. I don't want a school accredited. I want me as a parent to be able to decide if the curriculum is appropriate. Not the state. Not the state. I want the parents to know that they have the choice, that they have, that is their decision as to where they send their kid. I mean, as far as I was concerned, if you were accredited, that was a red flag for me, and that was years and years ago.
How about a couple of basic party platform issues like the Second Amendment and the right to life? Gosh.
Oh, Second Amendment. I've got my NRA sticker in the back of my car, and pro-life, 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 pro-life.
I ask this of all candidates.
If you don't have life,
sorry, go ahead.
What do you have?
That's true. That's true. I ask this of all candidates because I believe it's essential that we elect conservatives, Republicans this fall. Start off with, did you support President Trump? Did you support Derek Schmidt? And did you support Chris Kobach before that?
Yes, yes.
And will you support the Republican nominee up and down the ballot, regardless of who the candidate might be? So if it's not you, will you support the Republican nominee for governor?
Yes.
That's good, because there have been, even in this primary, there are Republicans on the ballot now who want to be on the ballot who did not support Derek Schmidt last time around, and I think that's an issue.
Oh, that it is. It is. And you know, I had people go, oh, you know, you shouldn't be supporting Derek. And I said, no, I am supporting Derek. I have differences with Derek, but I am supporting him.
Well, I mean, you know, we can have differences. We can disagree. Yeah. But, you know, any Republican is going to be better than another 4 years of Laura Kelly. And that's what we'll get with either of the two crackpots that they're putting up.
Yeah. John, you have to understand what is happening in Johnson County, the Democrats gaining more and more power in Johnson County. I mean, the Soros people of the world, they're looking at Kansas. They want Kansas, and they were 2.9 million people. We're cheap to buy two Senate seats.
Yeah, well,
I mean, this is a real problem that we have to make sure that we are true conservative Republicans, or our Republican base is just going to give up on us.
Trust me, they'll never get Sedgwick County. What they've done up there, they can't do down here. We're too pro life, pro gun. Get off my porch down here. They try that crap.
Yeah, well,
they try that crap down here. We'll shoot them off our porches.
I'm telling you, this blue wave has engulfed Johnson County.
Yeah.
And it's serious.
Yeah, I mean, know. I've door knocked a little bit up there, and I don't know what's in the water up in Johnson County. But trust me, if they tried that down here, we'd shoot them. Charlotte, I wish you the best of luck. If folks want more information on your campaign or if they want to volunteer, they can visit OHARAForKansas.com, correct?
Yes. And I write a column every week. So if you want to get my columns, then they are on a wide array of issues. And judges, we need the direct election of judges.
I agree with you completely. Charlotte, wish you the best of luck. We'll see you soon.
Thank you.
Don't forget, next Sunday, Larry Kudlow. In the meantime, have a great week, folks, and carry on.